Hey, before we get into episode 300, I just wanted to take a minute or two to talk to the audience because, yeah, it's been 300 episodes. It's been over 8 years. And for better or worse, you guys have kind of seen me grow up in the fitness industry from 20 years old to 28, from being a sophomore in college to now being at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning and doing some really cool stuff over there. So I just wanted to, again, take a second and say thank you for everyone that's listened to the show these last 8+ years now, these, you know, potentially like 550 or more episodes of audio, whether it be interviews with, you know, guests that we've had on the show, you know, starting off in the beginning with John Williams and then, you know, bringing on other people. It's been really cool to do these last 300 episodes these last 8 years. And for me, it's just been a great ride. So of course, you know, where do we go from here? And, you know, of course, episode 300, for me personally, I've had a blast doing the show and talking to so many great people and being able to share this stuff with you guys out there. But for more, you know, more is, I mean, it's 300, that's a lot of episodes, a lot of podcasting to do. So for me personally, I've gotten what I've wanted to get out of the podcast, but, from the response that I've gotten from people seeing them at Perform Better and, you know, the emails that we get, like I can never thank the people that have come up and said, yeah, you know, the FitCast changed my career path or changed my life in terms of motivation, or, you know, I went from being in a job that I hated and then hearing you talk to people on the FitCast and, you know, it made me want to go and get my certification and things like that. Like that means a lot. And it's like, it is those stories that keep this show, you know, super fun for me to do. And it keeps me motivated to do it. At the same time, you'll hear us talk about it a little bit in the episode today, but, with the podcast, like I said before, you know, I'm really not super pumped about getting sponsors that are going to be like, you know, Jim's fat loss program or the super insert supplement name. And what I want to do is continue to do the show and keep it free for everyone out there. So like I mentioned in the show, if you're in the position to do so and you want to help support the show, if you've gotten something out of these last 300 episodes, you know, please, like, this is how we're going to keep the show going, is to, you know, make it a financial motivation to continue going forward for myself. And again, it is only a case of where if you feel like you've gotten something out of the show, you're in the position where you're not going to like have to wait for your paycheck to make the donation. But, you know, you think you have like a situation where I think the FitCast is worth a couple bucks, I'll throw a couple dollars, you know, that guy's way. And people have been asking what's better, monthly or one time. Whatever, like, you know, you can go through PayPal. It's whatever works for you. Some people have made one-time donations, which are great. Some people have set up like monthly donations, which is great. And I'm not going to talk about this too much more, but in the end, like I said, this show wouldn't be done if it wasn't for you out there downloading and talking about the show. Share the podcast with a friend who's into fitness. Share it with someone who has questions about fitness, who's always asking you about, you know, fat loss or, you know, how do I, you know, get my squat numbers up or my deadlift numbers up. That is what I love to see going forward. So thank you for listening for over 300 episodes, if you count all like the weird stuff that we've done in between, whether it be the FitCast update or, you know, just me talking to you, answering questions, or the other one-offs that we've done. So thank you. And here is one of the best interviews that we've ever had on the show, Dan John. Hope you enjoy it. Well, welcome back to the FitCast. Believe it or not, we made it to episode 300. I am Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is the man of honor, I guess, Dan John. Dan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. I really, things are good. I'm traveling a lot and living the dream, and, you know, and congratulations on 300. It doesn't seem that long ago when I first met you, but
yeah,
you know, when you do the math, I mean, that's, wow, 300 episodes. That's amazing. What a resource for the future. You know, that's amazing. Congrats. Cheers.
Oh, thank you. And I've just continued to get less mature as I've continued to do the show, which I don't know what that says about me, but thankfully we've continued to put them out at least. And there's been some, been very fortunate just for just talking about the last 300. The only reason I've been able to do it is for, you know, people like you saying, yeah, I'll talk to you on the phone for an hour. You know, yeah. I got nothing, you know, I got nothing to lose talking to this kid. So, it's worked out all right. And obviously, more than anything, the audience out there for downloading the show, I wouldn't do it if people weren't downloading the show and, you know, putting up reviews on iTunes, and people have been great. Now things have slowed down, but, initially people were cool about, donating and helping support the show since we don't have sponsors or anything. But it is, it's been a fantastic ride, and I wouldn't have anyone else for episode 300. Lou Schuler was pissed.
Well, he should be. Well, he's got to bring his game up to be number 300. I mean, this big time. I mean, you know, he's really got to step up. You know, everyone's been telling him that. Lou, you got to step up.
Yeah.
You know? You're no 300. You're no 300. And he knows that. I know that. Yeah, maybe, you know, pencil him in for, you know, like 700, 800.
Well, he already, he pre-booked himself for episode, I think, 350 now. So he he's just – that's what's happening now, is people are just booking themselves so far in advance without even telling me that that is how it's going to work going forward, I guess.
I get 500 no matter what.
Deal. I mean, that's – I'm going to be 34 or something when that happens. That's going to be a long ways off. But we got a lot of questions from the audience, and one of the first things, you know, selfishly, that I would love to talk to you about, just because it is a little bit of a show of reflection, since we're at one of those, you know, 00 episodes. But this is a combination of a couple questions that I've gotten and that I had personally for you. But for people, not even just in the industry, but people who are getting into fitness, life advice, you know. What life advice do you wish that you got back in your 20s? Like, if you're having people come up to you in these Perform Better seminars, they're asking you for, you know, some guidance. What would you give them?
20s are tough. I mean, when you're in your 20s, there's two things that are true and they're unbeatable. Genetically and geographically, you're pretty much set. So, and let me break out both. You know who you are physically, and that's a big issue. You only get one body, and that's the one you have. And any damage you do to it in your 20s, and that could be just beer drinking and eating pizza every night, and getting fat as you can possibly get, that's there to stay. All that adipose tissue, you now have it the rest of your life. Congratulations. Anything stupid you do in injuries, you now have that the rest of your life. Geographically is the other one. I mean, basically, where you are, well, probably 22, 23, 24 is where you're going to be. So this is, you know, you've chosen to be where you are, physically, geographically. And the thing I would say, and this is big, in your 20s, if you haven't taken care of the basics, stop, take care of it now. If you have to go into debt to get your bachelor's degree, if that's something you want to do, you've got to take care of it. Your bachelor's degree should be taken care of in your early 20s, not in your early 40s, if you can. I understand stuff happens. But this is the time in life where you should be, you know, notching those things off. If there is something, a skill that you wish you had, now is the time to learn it. The Olympic lifts aren't going to get easier in your 60s to learn, for example. That's just a big example. It's going to be easier to travel in your 20s than it is in your 50s, or, well, 30s and 40s. Take care of business now. I cannot emphasize that enough. Take care of things. If you know, I always tell people, they say, you know, should I go to college? And I say, you know, it's funny, 4 years from now, it's still going to be 4 years from now. And if you get your degree, 4 years from now, you'll have your degree. If you don't get your degree, 4 years from now, you won't have your degree. So the 20s are the time, I would say, you know, just like the song from the 70s, you know, take care of business, you know, night and day. You've got to start putting that stuff on the wall, the degree, the certificate, the understanding of certain things. You just have to do it. And the worst part is of the people I've met in my life, the 20s are the worst, no offense. But that is the worst time of life. You guys, I talk about it all the time with adolescents. You know, I tell you where to go to preschool. I tell you where to go to kindergarten. I tell you where to go to elementary school. Then you go to high school. And about 3 years into your high school degree, into your high school time, I turn to you and say, well, where do you want to go to college? What? So I've been making every decision in your whole life. And then all of a sudden I say, where do you want to go to college? And it is a smorgasbord out there. I mean, every time I watch the Division III playoffs, I learn about all these new colleges I've never even heard of. And they've got these great football teams and they're wonderful and I've never even heard of them. And so you're going through, well, San Diego has nice weather and, ooh, I should go to Harvard. And then I say, well, your grades are not exactly Harvard. You know, Florida's a fun place. I could party every night there. Okay. And then it ends up you go to the local school because the decision-making process that you have been making with your grades and stuff is narrowing you down. When you get to your 20s, it seems like every option opens up to you again. Oh, I don't know. I could be a ballerina or a brain surgeon. No, you can't because you didn't take care of business when you need to take care of business. So my life advice to anybody in their 20s is finish it. I don't care what it is, finish it. Start closing. It's like cutting a wound, you know, cauterizing a blood vessel. Start cauterizing blood vessels. You got to stop your bleeding in your 20s. Stop wasting your time and take care of business. And the biggest thing, man, if you put on fat in your 20s, it stays until your 90s. Okay? Good luck to you on that.
Perfect. Well, let's continue to talk a little bit about this and focus it more on diet and training. You know, again, being episode 300, just giving people advice out there. I know we have a lot of like weekend warriors that listen to the show and sure. They're not necessarily in the field. So this isn't their life all the time. But what advice would you have for people out there that are kind of spinning their wheels and not really making any progress with their diet and training? They're still going to the gym, but they're kind of just, you know, where they were a year ago or 2 years ago or whatever.
Well, I'll be honest, and this is just something to kind of keep in your mind, is that you're doing fine. If you're spinning your wheels, you're going to the gym, and the only progress you're making is you're not getting fatter, the progress you're making is you're not getting worse, you're making progress. You know, I wrote that article for Men's Health, and I had all these idiots comment on it. I wrote this little article that said, your New Year's resolution for the year 2015 is to be 1 pound lighter than you were on January 1st, 2014. And people said, well, that's not much of a goal. Oh, really? Really? Call me on January 1st, 2015 and tell me where you are. So if you feel like you're spinning your wheels, first and foremost, feel comfortable with it. The biggest mistake most people make on this, Kev, is that they start to slide to medium on all their training. They're always trying to do everything, and so nothing really happens. If you feel like you really want to make progress, find something, circle it on the calendar, and go after it. Right now, my group we're doing here, and I know this is a question for later, but we're doing something we invented called Lean Made Simple. Is we took the programming from my book, Mass Made Simple, and we're doing it without the eating. So we're trying to do it without all the extra calories. And it's weird because every one of us will admit that you just can't stop eating. My workout today that I'm going to do right after we talk here, I've got to do all this stuff. And then at the end, 3 sets of 25 reps in a back squat with 115 pounds. It's not that much work, but I'll be ravenous at the end of it. Now, why are we doing it? Well, we circled 7 weeks on the calendar and we said, let's just see if this is going to work. So that's what I would argue for someone who feels like they're spinning the wheels. Pick something. Pick a dietary thing, pick a exercise thing, and say, for the next 6 weeks, I'm going to master, I'm going to learn, I'm going to do something and stick with it. You know, Lent lasts 40 days, and I've always thought that's a really good thing for people. If you have an eating issue, during Lent, say, okay, I'm going to give up soda during Lent. And then you bring in community, you bring in the wrath of God. I don't think God gets very wrathful if you drink soda during Lent. But my point is to figure out a 40-day, 3-week, 2-week thing where you actually circle it and try to make progress on something. If what I normally notice with people who are spinning their wheels is that they try to do everything. You know, it's like, let's go back to going to college. If you try to have 25 majors, you're not going to have a major. You've got to dive in, pick something, and go forward. And so what I would do is I would just find something. And it doesn't matter what it is. You're going to drink a gallon of ice water every day for the next 2 weeks. Reasonable, right? Pretty doable. Pretty easy to accomplish. Do it. And then call me in 2 weeks and then say, you know, it's funny, I noticed this about myself. I noticed that. And that's how you stop the spinning process. You stop it by picking something and focusing on it and becoming good at it. Biggest problem most people have is that, oh, I saw it all the time in college too. I mean, I can't tell you how many Division I athletes ruin their career because they play pickup basketball games or get involved in a rec league and wreck their body. Here you are, a Division I athlete. Everybody wants to be you. You've got the letter jacket. You've got the thing. You've got the scholarship. And you blow your knee out playing a pickup basketball game. Or, you know, you're in the fraternity league basketball and you hurt yourself. That's the problem most of us have. And I tell you, take this and circle it. It's in your 20s when you do all that stupid stuff. Because you don't finish stuff. You don't focus on stuff. Enough pontificating for this morning. Go ahead.
Robert has a couple questions. This is something that we may have hit on in a previous interview, but I think it's always good, for reminder's sake. He wanted to know, what would you say are the three most important movements that should be in any program, or I guess every program?
Well, my gym, we break them into six. That's push, pull, hinge, squat, loaded carry, and then something like groundwork. But let's just do it this way. What did most people miss? Most people never get up and down off the ground. So I would say groundwork, they could be Turkish get-ups, it could be bear crawls, it could be tumbling. Tumbling is the lost art, I think, in our field. If you want to get your cardio work in, go tumble for an hour. I tell you, you won't be able to walk the next day. Next, of course, I think most people fail to have any loaded carries in the program. There's no farmer walks, there's no sled pulls, there's no prowler, no car pushes, that kind of thing. And of course, I don't think most people squat correctly. They need to get, you know, just take 20 pounds and just sit in the bottom position of the squat and I'll be happy. Those are the three big ones they miss. It's funny because most people do. I mean, I go to most gyms and most people seem to know how to do this exercise called the bench press. And, you see a lot of pulling exercises, but you don't see those big movements. And the funny thing is, if poopy comes down and, you know, you can do your walking dead or, you know, whatever scenario you want, groundwork and loaded carries are the things going to save your life. You know, you might look like Tarzan and that's great. You got these big pythons, but if you live on worms for a couple of weeks, those things are going to be gone. What you need is work capacity, and you build that up through the farmer carry and things like that. So that's what I think. And I think that's pretty good advice. If Robert wants to hear more, there's a book I wrote called Intervention, which I think has some value. And I talk about it in way too much depth.
Got my copy right here.
Is it signed?
It's not signed. I think I purchased this myself.
Okay, let's make sure we take care of that next time I see you, okay?
Well, you're going to be in Long Beach, right?
Yeah,
bring it. I'll bring it to Long Beach.
Absolutely. Be honored.
It's coming up fast. Okay, so let's we'll mix up a little bit. We got a couple other questions. This one from Michael. I think it's a really great question. Dan is an incredibly upbeat and enjoyable guy to listen to, even in training videos. How has this approach helped mold his teaching? Does he find that having a, quote, warm attitude keeps students from being overstressed and more eager to learn?
Well, you got to be careful. He only knows this, Dan, John. He doesn't know the douche I used to be. I used to be incredibly asshole-ish. I was just like these guys. And oh, God, thank God the internet wasn't around when I was 15. Because I would have been that expert, zit-faced expert. You don't know what you're talking about, you know. I'd have been that guy. My first years of coaching, I was not this way. I was kind, but you know, I was just so much crueler and harsher. And what I discovered is it really didn't help. long term, you know, one of my former throwers is every time they talk about upcoming Supreme Court nominees, his name comes up. That's one of my former throwers. And one of my former throwers is my doctor. Another one works over here. He's a mortician. When I stand back and look, the lessons we learn on the field and in the weight room are great. But 10 years from now, you're going to be a father, a mother, a member of the community. And that's very important to me. And so I kind of mellowed out through the years and became a lot more upbeat, a lot more positive. And here's the funny thing, Kev, is that we started performing better. The bigger picture I became, when I would talk to the guys about, okay, that's all great and all, but you know, let's make sure you're doing X, Y, and Z. Make sure, hey, you got to graduate in 4 or 5 years. You know, there's that red shirt thing. You know, you got to take care of business. You got to go to the best school you can go to. You got to get, you know, the more I started doing that, the better and better my athletes performed. And then I began to notice that in the meets, when we went in and we were under control and humorous, we were able to always, on that last throw, snap that rubber band and win. So I think it's a good question. It's a very good question, but it's, you know, I wasn't a bad coach. I was a good coach, but a lot of us grew up in this era of this Vince Lombardi thing. And I still, you know, and a lot of coaches they still do it. They say terrible things about their athletes. They question their manhood. They say awful things about their sexuality and stuff. It's just, it wasn't appropriate then, and it's not appropriate now. I don't know how much of that I did. I hope I didn't do much. But it's just, it's hard to grow up in that system. I mean, I had a very good head high school football coach, Coach DeYoung, but many of his assistants were very, very bad in hindsight. And I thought that's the way you coach. My high school track coach, no matter what you did, he would always say something like you weren't good enough. And I look back now and it's like, you know, I don't know why coach, well, I won't mention his name, but we had one really good coach, one not so good. And I look back now and I was a 162-pound discus thrower throwing 170, and he never once said anything good to me. You know, going into my senior year, he said, you know, I think if you get over 150, it'll be a miracle. I mean, that's how you coach people, but that's how it was back then. And so just to let you know, I mean, I would hope that I'm modeling a better way to coach now. And I do. I talk to my old athletes all the time. And it's funny because I will bump into my old athletes. We had the 30th anniversary of a state championship football team last year. And I bumped into a bunch of my old athletes. And now, you know, I mean, these guys now are in their 40s, you know, late 40s. Jeez, late 40s. It's hard to believe. And the stories they have aren't of me being a jerk. The stories they have of me stepping up. And it's good for me to remember that. And I do. I apologize for yelling at them and stuff. And it's always like, it's fine. I deserved it. So I guess in a long-winded way, I'm trying to say you're lucky we have the DVDs now and not then. And when you coach and you care, you seem to get better performance.
You know? Was there any specific like event that kind of turned the tide on how you coached?
Well, this is going to sound odd. I've almost died twice, clearly, two times. Once I got hit in the head with the discus in college, and I lost 6 months of my memories because I don't remember anything after that for 6 months. But then when I went to the Middle East, I picked up a liver parasite, and I lost 40 pounds in 2 weeks. And I wasn't doing well. When I came back, I just didn't have the energy to be a jerk anymore. And I had to tell the kids, hey, you know, guys, I would take naps. I would teach during the day, and every free period, I would sleep on the floor in my classroom. So I would teach a class, take a nap, teach a class, take a nap, go to practice. During double sessions, I found the high jump pits and slept for 2 and 3 hours. And I just told the kids, and it's funny because all of a sudden when I kind of humbled myself a bit and told them, hey, I can barely function. All of a sudden they stepped up and got bigger. And I realized that, well, I don't know if I realized it, but all of a sudden a couple of years later, I was a much better coach. And then of course, once you have children, and I have two daughters and I have two grandchildren, that also makes you realize that none of this is very important. I wish sometimes people ask me sometimes, what would you, you know, if you coach yourself, what you have done. And I always say, you know, I wouldn't have listened to myself, so it wouldn't have mattered. You know, I would say that. That'd be about 1985. Yeah.
The next question, let's go to Matthew, who you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but Matthew wanted to know, you know, what are some of the latest experiments that you have going on over at your place?
Well, one is this new assessment that we're doing, and it's funny because it's ready to go. I mean, I feel now that we're done. It's called the 1-2-3-4 assessment. I feel really good about it. We're doing Lean Made Simple now, and we assessed it going in, or assess it coming out, and it's just it's called 1-2-3-4. There's one test, then two measurements, three questions, and then four physical tests. And you don't have to do all four of the physical tests. From that assessment, we figure out if you're a body comp, a strength, or a mobility client. And then we also test to see if the program worked. So that's kind of a fun thing we're doing right now. We're doing Lean Made Simple. I had some guys in the Air Force doing an earlier method of this with kettlebells, and this time we're trying it with the barbells. I'm thinking that the kettlebells were better. Doing a 6-week, 7-week lean, high rep squats, complexes, stuff like that. I honestly think that the kettlebell was a better idea on this. I'm only into workout. Today will be workout 4. There's 14 total workouts. And I'm already, it's funny because I always say, don't judge a program until it's done. And here I am on workout 4. It's not very good. Well, this is because you don't want to squat today, Danny. That's the truth, you know. So that's kind of a fun thing. We try a lot of interesting things. Let's see. Let me just think about some of the other fun stuff we're doing. We've put the hip thruster into tons of our workouts now. And I really like that. That's Brett Contreras' hip thruster. Big fan of that. I'm playing around on rings again, though I tell you, the next day, man, I am numb in my left shoulder. I got no idea why. Sorenex came out with a new ab wheel that I have decided is one of the best ideas I've ever seen in my life. So, you know, sometimes, I hope the listener is getting the idea here. Sometimes we're trying out new pieces of equipment, new exercises to see how they would fill in, how they work. And then sometimes we're actually doing the bigger stuff, a new assessment, taking a program we've all done before, assessing ourselves before, do the program, assess after. Let me just give you two quick tests that in the assessment. We did the standing long jump and a farmer walk with body weight for distance. At the end of the 14 workouts, we will do those two tests again. Well, if your standing long jump doesn't improve, okay. So you got to, for the listener, think about it this way. If I put on 30 pounds of body mass doing a program and my standing long jump doesn't go up, it stays the same, I'm fine with that. I'm a bigger engine and I still jump as far. That's good. I mean, as a football coach, I'm very happy with that. Now, if we do a 6-week program and my standing long jump comes back a foot, you know, then I'm concerned. Something serious. I mean, I might have cancer in this case, or I don't know, something. I mean, something bad has happened. And then the other one is, how far do you carry your body weight for distance? You know, if you go 100, pardon me, if you go 100 yards on the first day, and at the end of the 6-week training program, you can only go 80, that was a terrible program. Something wrong, something bad happened. This gets back to your spinning your wheels thing. That's why assessment, constant assessment is so important, because this guy who says he's spinning his wheels, if his standing long jump is coming back to him over a 2 or 3 year period, it started out at, 88 inches, then it went to 85, now it's 79. He's obviously, something in his training is going wrong. So these are the kind of things we're doing right now. We always assess each other. Like, you come to my gym and we do the FMS on you. We'll do my little 1, 2, 3, 4 assessment. We'll maybe test the number of pull-ups you do. Great. That's assessing you. But we don't often enough assess the program. And so what I'm trying to do now is add that into our training concept, is assess the program. If you get 6, 7, 8 people all doing Lean Made Simple, and at the end of the 6, 7 weeks, everybody improves their standing long jump and everybody improves their farmer walk, then that means that was a good program. I can, take the little judge's mallet and go, bam, it is successful, it's good. And then I can say it's a good program for this and this. We don't do that very often. We always assess the individual, but we don't assess the programs. And that's kind of where my career is heading right now, is program assessment. And not just pulling it out of your rear end, but actually assessing the program.
We got another good question from Nathan that goes back to the spinning the wheels thing a little bit. He says he has always wondered this: how does it feel when a client goes off the rails and torpedoes their routine and goals? How does it feel to you as a coach? Do you just throw up your hands? How do you approach the client when you know that they are their own worst enemy?
Well, okay. That would be a real continuum of people here. If it's someone who's trying too hard, then I would have a lot of empathy for that person. And we would, I know that the best thing, if someone's working too hard, I know the best thing they can do is, go on an all-inclusive 2-week vacation, go do something else, get away from us, really is the best thing they can do. If it's just somebody who's what we call a bigger, better deal, BBD, at our, my language, a BBD, I fire them. Just get rid of them. I don't have enough time in my life. If someone keeps questioning what we're doing and they saw something online. And the thing is, I talk about it, I'm writing a new book and I talk about it, and it really bothers me that this happens so much. I call it the Socratic dialogue. Ask me if I eat colorful vegetables, Kevin. Go ahead. Good.
Do you eat colorful vegetables?
What do you mean by vegetables?
Those things that come out of the ground.
Can you give me some examples? You see what I just did? So that drives me crazy. You really aren't interested in what I'm telling you. I always joke about, especially Perform Better. I love Perform Better, but I don't take questions at Perform Better. Did you know that? You ever notice that? I'll take questions before, for the people who are early, because the people are early. My brother-in-law taught me this trick. Craig, he's a EMT. And he says when he goes to a school, kids will raise their hands and he says, is this a story or is this a question? Because a question has a question mark at the end. And a story is something like, my grandpa was in an ambulance once. And when you go to Perform Better, the hand will go up and be like, hi, I am certified and blah, blah, blah. One time I walked the Himalayas and, shut up. You're not asking a question, you're telling a story. So for me, this BBD issue is huge. It drives me crazy. Your client, this client is always looking for the new shiny toy. And honestly, you don't have time. Fire them. Get rid of them. And I know that sounds mean and cruel, but there is no perfect diet. And the joke is, the next diet is the perfect diet, right? The next training program is the perfect training program. And sometimes you just have to do the work. you know, Mike Brown and I put together this program for training for the Strong First certification. And everybody who's done it has done great, just nailed it. But I'll get these emails, Dan, I noticed on the program, and then, you know, I love Brett Jones, good friend of mine. Brett says, do this. Then I'll be like, well, then do Brett's program. Well, how about if I combine your programs? You do anything you want. I mean, you know, ever since the dawn of language, we've been fighting for the freedom to do stupid stuff. Go do any stupid thing you want. That's fine. Just stop emailing me. Do whatever stupid thing you want to do, and then go to the cert. I don't care. But that's why I don't work with this bigger, better deal thing. I don't work with it at all. It drives me crazy. So his question is very good, I think. And I guess you're going to have to make sure you put it on a color spectrum. If the person is genuine and really training and their own worst enemy because they're trying to be too good, that's fine. But if it's just this Socratic dialogue, kick him out. Say, you got to go. I can't. I did this the other day on an email. This guy was, do you know, Kev, do you got a guy named Mike Boyle?
Does he have his glasses, right?
Yes, he's quite handsome, yes, as I recall.
Yeah.
And it was like the guy was trying to have this, start this email war with me and Mike. And guess what the issue was? Guess what the issue was?
Squatting?
Squatting. Is that Mike and I are good friends, and Mike and I absolutely agree down the line on squatting? Did you know that?
I've heard the conversation, I think, at our facility once or twice.
Yeah. And it's like, why are you starting? And it's like, all the guy, you know, it's like, if you don't want to squat, don't squat. Mm-hmm. But don't email, you know, just don't squat. It's a, you know, the world will be still spin tomorrow if you don't squat. I like squatting. I think it does great things. I like one-legged work. I think it does great things. It's all good. Stop. So sorry, I'm ranting. I always rant when I talk to you, huh? I'm sorry.
No, it's perfectly fine. And it's something I talked to Lou about, that guy we're talking about before. That guy.
Oh, Lou?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got to raise his game.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, the thing that kind of turns me off a lot of times, and I stay away from it as much as I can, like I'm not on really Facebook as much anymore, is just there's just lots of like arguing about, you know, little semantic things. And I just cannot get the energy up for being interested in those arguments as much anymore. It's just, it seems like it's more negative than really helping with a conversation or helping people out. It's just more just like saying, I'm right. I'm going to tell you why I'm right. And it's not really a good, you know, avenue for dialogue. Like us talking to each other on video, we can have a conversation. It's a lot harder when you're just typing on a keyboard on Facebook and then you leave and then you come back, you know, an hour later, there's 10 things you have to reply to and all that stuff.
Well, I learned this from Dick Notmeyer. You know, he used to always say, you know, I remember one time Pete Hoffman went to a weightlifting camp, and he came back with all these new ideas, K value, the double, what was it used to call it, the double hinge or something like that, all these programming things, all this. And Dick said, that's fine. That's great. You learned all this. But in my gym, we do things this way because I don't understand that stuff. It's brand new stuff. It's not been proved. And by the way, everything I just said, none of it actually works. And and Dick's point was, this is who we are. This is our gym. This is what we do. And if you want to go, I mean, you're certainly fine to train this way. But in our gym, this is the way we do it. And it was a good lesson for me. I think I learned a lot. Oh, you see it on Facebook all the time. It's CrossFit good or evil. Who cares? I mean, it's like the Nautilus machines of the past, you know, as the weavers once said in 1980, this too shall pass, you know, it's everything comes and goes. Everything's great and terrible. Squats are good. Squats are bad. You know, they answered all questions. It's the worst thing you can do. It drives you crazy. You just got to make sure you got to. And the thing is, it's just intellectual masturbation. There's no need to do this. You know, it's funny because, you know, my background is, you know, not only history, but in theology. And theology is based on geometry, and it's always about your givens. And that's the biggest problem most people have, is they don't have any givens. You know, they show up and they, but they don't have any givens. That's why it's so great, I think, to talk with track and field people, because track and field is such, this is a good mark. This is a good mark for this level. And you need to go to here to be better. And then you go there. And it's clear. It is clear. That's why people, you know, they fall in love with Olympic lifting in the beginning when they get that quick, that nice, beautiful rise where literally every time you come to the gym, you add more plates and you're stronger. Then you hit that plateau, man. That's when people quit Olympic lifting, is when it's not fun anymore. Track and field's the same thing. You know, you improve, and then you flatten out. And one of the reasons I like to use Olympic lifting and track and field as kind of my truth is because the givens in those sports are so clear. Now, Olympic lifting is tinkered a little bit by changing the weight classes every few years, which I hate. throwing out all the records and changing the weight classes. Oh, that'll get rid of the drugs. Good plan. But that's what I love about discus throwing. I can talk about Kenny Carpenter in the 1936 Olympics, and we're doing the same event, the exact same event. I think sometimes to help that, I know this sounds like a real long way around this question, but you know, once you know what your givens are, and then your job is just to move on from there this is who we are. This is my gym. This is what we do. This is what we believe in. This is how we treat each other. And from there, let's talk about your goals and if we can assist you.
We got a question in from David. What is Dan John's answer to the age-old question? How strong is strong enough for somebody who is just trying to live a healthy lifestyle?
Well, again, it's an intervention, but let me just give you the basics, okay? You should be able to bench body weight. I would say squat body weight. I would say probably sneak up on a double body weight deadlift. You ought to be able to do probably 5 pull-ups. I mean, that would be – and you should probably be able to take – you should be able to farm or walk with your body weight. And, you know, how far, let's say 20 yards, 20 meters, whatever, just long enough to show that you're competent to walk with it. That's strong enough for almost anybody, anytime, anywhere. Arthur Jones back in the 60s said he could never think – there were very, very few people would ever have to squat over 400 pounds. And Dan Martin a while ago about, you know, really – that Jones said a lot of interesting things, a lot of them crazy. But the 400-pound squat thing, you know, he might be right, you know. One of the things that's great about being, again, a track athlete is that you can look at your weightlifting numbers and see how they carry over onto the field. The late Jorn Svensson and I had this interesting conversation. I would like to say changed my career, and then I threw all this out, where he started only lifting twice a week. He'd go into the weight room, and his goal was 45 minutes twice a week, get as many, you know, as much. It was a press and a quick lift. How many? Just get as many sets as he could. A little bit of jumping. Get out the door twice a week. And he said he wasn't worried about strength anymore. He wasn't worried about anything because he had noticed that he was now strong enough, and that getting stronger wasn't making the discus go farther. The more time he spent in the weight room, the more he saw the numbers drop off. So I think that's the beauty of something like a measurement like track and field, is that you can just look for this person here. Why don't you test your standing long jump and, you know, play around with different things. Like, I don't know, do a 4-week squat program, or do a press program for 4 to 6 weeks. And then just look at your standing long jump and just see what happens. It'll be kind of a fun thing. If your standing long jump goes up when you only lift 2 days a week, that might be all you need. It'd be fun. It's fun to play with these kinds of ideas like that. So strong enough, you know, bench and squat, body weight, be able to show that you can do some pull-ups, probably a double body weight deadlift, probably, and then being able to carry your body weight for distance. That's strong enough for most of us, for just about everything you're ever going to need to do. Now, if you want to play in the NFL, we got to up those numbers. If you want to throw the distance far, we got to up those numbers. But I like the question. Just try to live a healthy lifestyle. Interesting thing, too, if you don't mind, David, if, to follow up on that. Everything you do above those numbers is going to be a cost-to-benefit ratio for you. So if you decide, okay, Dan says 5 pull-ups. Well, I'm going to show him he's wrong, and I'm going to get to 25 pull-ups. And then your elbow starts hurting all the time, and you can't type as well. And it, when you play catch, you hurt your shoulder. Cost-to-benefit ratio. Now you can do all these pull-ups, but when you throw a fastball, it hurts your shoulder. It might make it or whatever. I'm just saying, we make a deal with the devil in elite athletics. When you hear me do workshops, I'll often note that the only joint in my body not to have surgeries is the ankle. Every other joint I have has had been under the knife. You make a deal with the devil to be at a high level. And if you just want to be happy and healthy and wise, which I think is a great idea, get strong enough and then take care of business and all the other aspects of your life. I think I was fortunate because even though, you know, I mean, I was a Division I MVP. That is a big deal. I still spent a lot of my time trying to keep my academic side up. And I think I lucked out doing that when I did it, you know, when I was 18, 19, 20, 21. Because once my body broke, it broke. I'd have to take a year off fixing it. So just remember that. Get strong enough. Test yourself in a few little basic little things, and then just see how easy you can maintain that strong enough. Good question, I thought.
And just to clarify for the women out there, same rules apply.
Yeah, the women are different. You know, Josh Hillis says something interesting. He says that if a woman can do 3 pull-ups and 3 dips, universally, she's smoking hot. As long as and he also adds, and either back squat or deadlift 135 for 5. Those numbers are not very high, are they? So very often what happens with women is that sometimes they overshoot that cannon. And they try too hard. They try to get skinny fat, and that doesn't work. The thing I noticed in high school female athletes is no matter what their weight, once they deadlifted 275, all of a sudden they started dominating on the varsity level. So I don't know what magically happened at 275, but, you know, we still just don't have enough numbers, Kevin. We just don't have enough on the female side. The numbers, sadly, I used to use these numbers, those poor girls, that I got from the East Germans on their throwers. This is when you're young and dumb and you don't know any better. These numbers were, I can't remember. I can't remember if it was a 155 snatch or a 155 clean and jerk. One of the numbers for a female thrower was 231 clean and jerk. And there was an East German woman thrower who snatched 231. She was a javelin thrower and snatched 231. And I was using these numbers being so stupid. And I didn't, you're just so gullible as a young coach. Oh, let's get the girls cleaning 155. It's like, oh my God. I look back on that now. It's like, and yeah, hey, I tell you though, the girls I had then were pretty good throwers, you know? And I was always wondering why I can't get this girl up to throwing, you know, 180, 190, 200. Oh, geez. That's the growth process of coaching.
And just to go back to something you were talking about a little bit earlier, again, I can't remember if we talked about this on a previous episode, but when you talked about, you know, maybe you just go and for the next 4 weeks you do a squat program. Is that how you like to set things up? Is, you know, find one goal and kind of focus on that for 3 weeks, whether it be their squat or your deadlift or your bench or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say that is what my gym does.
Okay.
Mark and Mike just finished a pressing program that Pavel gave them. I did a pressing program. So we were all experimenting with pressing programs back in maybe April, May, June. Okay. Right now we're all doing high rep squats. We're all just experimenting. It's nice that when we all kind of decide to do it together. frankly, I have no idea how they wrangled me into this stupid idea, because I am not a fan of high rep squats. I thought I had done enough of them in my life, but you know, in about half an hour, I'll be on the rack going up and down and up and down. So I think that's really a good idea. I'll get an article. I got a nice thing from TC Loma. He's from T Nation. He said, you know, Dan, will you experiment with the 10,000 swing thing? So we did 20,000 swings to come up with the numbers that I came up with. So it took us, how many workouts was that? So that's 40 workouts figuring out the 10,000 swings. And it's funny because here I did 40 workouts of 500 swings with just about every number combination I could think of. And then immediately I write the article and people say, well, why don't you do this instead? It's like, really? Why don't you do 20,000 swings and then get back to me on how your idea is better? I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I tell you, it's hard to read that kind of stuff and not want to blast them. You know, it's funny because if I do write something negative, like this one guy was asking questions on the Strong First forum about the simple and sinister routine. Well, he didn't have the book. And he kept asking questions. It's like, buy the book. It's like $20 or whatever. You know, that you got internet access. You know, it's pretty easy to get a hold of books in this day and age. But I'm not trying to be a jerk. It's just because of the way things are with the internet now. I wrote Coach Mon a letter my sophomore year of college about an interest in going to Utah State University. And it took such an act of bravery for me to put the stamp on it to send it off to him. But in this day and age, I mean, you'll write on a forum about, you know, how, I mean, you'll see guys questioning the bravery of combat soldiers. It's like, really? And because, you know, we're all basically anonymous online. And that's the thing. If I become God, I would make it impossible to be anonymous online. You know, your picture would, you know, all these, you know, it's funny. I go to these, do you mind if I ramble on?
By all means.
My friend Dan Fouts once said it best. We were at a weightlifting thing and he looked around and he said, I've never seen so many people talking about weightlifting and none of them look like they've ever lifted a weight. And that's come sometimes when I feel like these internet experts, you know, they come up and they say, Dan, can I have my picture with you? And I take it and it looks like, you know, one of my freshmen football players standing next to me. And this is the guy who keeps questioning my coaching. Yeah. So enough. So you get me to rant. I blame you.
Oh no, it's fine. We got time. We got,
no, rant. You make me rant. I don't mind rambling. Oh. Ranting. Yeah.
I apologize for that. You know, it's the form that I like to
see. Lou wouldn't rant.
Oh, he did.
Oh,
he did.
I see how this works.
This was, we're kind of doing this in the future, but, he definitely had some good stuff to talk about. And kind of coming off that, one of the things that we got, for you from a couple different people, but I'm going to use Mark's, wording for this. What things in the fitness industry these days get you excited for the future? Because you alluded to, or you mentioned like, you know, arguing and stuff on forums and stuff like that. And sometimes after you just kind of get numb to that, but like what is, you know, making you excited in the fitness industry, whether it be in terms of information or just, you know, trends or whatever?
It's a good question. Yeah. Well, there's two that come to mind. First is this idea. Now people want to measure again. People actually want to start measuring again. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the FMS is a good tool. Well, now how can we measure what we found out from the FMS? You follow my point? Is people are getting excited again about measurement, and you know, anybody like with my background, track and field, Olympic lifting, measurement is what it's all about. That's the proof in the pudding. You know, great. I mean, I have great respect for power lifters, but what happened in our industry is that back in, you know, I'm going back maybe to the 50s, the guys from track and field, the guys from Olympic lifting, kind of dominated the information on strength and health. Then when about 1975 with the Educational Bodybuilder by Arnold, then bodybuilders took over the industry. And so, you know, you'd go to a high school football program and they would train like Mr. Olympia. And the problem is they look like Tarzan, played like Jane. That stuff don't play. Then, and with all deference to them, the powerlifters have kind of taken over for a while. And so you went to a high school, a college program, and you see guys, you know, train like they're going to, you know, going to go to a bench squat and deadlift competition. And that has been, they did a great value, but it doesn't carry over to the throws very well. Well, we've all of a sudden come back and realized that, well, Dan, everything I just said is your opinion, to quote Lebowski. That's like your opinion, man. Okay. And you could just throw that right back in my face and go, hey, man, that's like your opinion. I go, wow. So all of a sudden, well, how do I know whether bodybuilding or Olympic lifting or powerlifting or tumbling is going to help my athletes? Well, we've got to have measurements. And that, I find that exciting. I mean, I have some very basic, simple measurements. I gave you the two best ones I know, the standing long jump and the farmer walk, because there's no learning curve on either of them. There's none. You just do it. I mean, if you need a learning curve on the farmer walk, you're too stupid for me to train. But now we're getting back to measurements. So I find that kind of nice. The other thing that's kind of interesting to me is that I've begun seeing the return of loaded supports, was what I call them. Now, back in 91, Dave Turner had me do a lot of rack work, where you do like a quarter squat and you do like an overhead with the heavy lockouts. I'm seeing a return to them. And the thing that makes me kind of excited is the load on these isn't 800 pounds and 500 pounds. The load is 50. And they're doing some interesting things on loaded supports. At Perform Better, we have that pre-com. We talk about some of this. But I find it really, you know, I find it exciting. You know, another area that, if I'm just to add a third one, is this kind of idea that I see it a lot at Perform Better, is that the idea that the body is a collection of tubes. And so that people are starting to talk about is it 600 muscles or something like that? You don't have 600 muscles. You have one sheath with 600 units. You know, and this new way of looking at the human body. Because anytime I think you look at the body as one piece, I think you're on the right track. And it's kind of, when I go listen to other speakers that Perform Better, a lot of them are coming, not so much the guys like me, the strength guys, but the other guys they bring in, look at the body as a tube, and everything is connected to everything else, and everything influences everything else. It makes me happy, because I think of that as the best way to talk about the human body. But also it's the best way to keep things in perspective when coaching an athlete. Those would be kind of three areas that are something exciting. And I hope you hear some enthusiasm in my voice, because they really, truly do, you know?
Well, we were talking before about like the Perform Better seminars, and I always come out of there with, you know, a pretty optimistic outlook on things, just because there is lots of positivity. And just from, like, even just you saw in Providence Center, you were in Chicago for a little bit, but people are just incredibly positive at those events. So I would say, you know, for him, you know, go to one of those and just, you know, see what the vibe is like.
You know, I don't like to cross sell on when I do any kind of thing like this. You'll notice I never cross sell. Like in my book Intervention, I mentioned I don't cross sell. Okay, that was a joke. Okay, that was how I cross sell. Okay, but Perform Better is pretty amazing. I mean, Chris does a wonderful job. I kind of wish it had been around earlier in my career. I used to go to the football workshops. Interesting quick side story. I went to a workshop years ago, and Jimmy Johnson, who was coaching at Miami, gave the keynote. And the next morning, I got a chance to have breakfast with him. It's a long story, but won't. But one of his former players just visited me. He played lineman for the Dolphins. when Johnson was there or the Cowboys. I can't remember how that worked, but. And he said about Johnson, he goes, yeah. And I told him what the things that Johnson taught us. And he goes, yeah, that's exactly what he told us too. And it made me happy because about 30 years ago, all we really had in our industry was these sports gatherings, these sport, you know, where football coaches, baseball coaches, basketball. But now with Before Better and some other things, we have these specific trainer strength coach ones now. And that's kind of nice because you will hear something that changes your career. And 30 years later, literally you'll be still impacted by that event. Like I was with Coach Johnson. Yeah.
And, I think that is where we're going to wrap things up.
Can we just make sure we answer those two questions that we sort of skipped? Can you give me 20 seconds?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, somebody asked about trap bars. I don't like trap bars for deadlifts and squats, no. I like trap bars for farmer walks. I think the trap bar might be the best general piece of equipment to get most people farmer walking. It's easy to pick up a trap bar. It's easy to walk with and it's a barbell, so you can load it. You can load it easily. So if I say I want 225 on the trap bar, you mentally know exactly what to do. If I say 225 on the farmer bar, it really is a mental effort to get 225 pounds evenly on two farmer bars. So I'm a big fan of that. And I'm not a big fan of that trap bar deadlift. Another one of my friends who's no longer with us, Lane Cannon, famously could do, what was it? He did 405 for 20 reps in the trap bar deadlift, waited a week or two, and it could only do 425 for a max. And he's the first person who came to me. I coached him in high school. He came to me later. He found me and said, I'm doing this stuff called high intensity training. Here's what's happened. I'm not getting stronger doing it. And I kind of went, well, yeah, duh. Dude, 20 reps in the trap bar deadlift is impressive, but there's no carryover to high reps. And then the other question, another second one from Robert, is who's the biggest influences in my life? I would always be remiss not to mention Dick Notmeyer, who I still in contact with all the time, who was my Olympic lifting coach. Coach Ralph Mon, of course, who died in 2006, who that famous phone call, my name is Coach Ralph Mon from Utah State University, and I'd like to offer you a full ride scholarship. That's the first words he ever said out of his mouth to me on the phone. Both of them really changed my life. I would throw in my brother Gary, even though, you know, he's my brother Gary. And I got to tell you, as I age more and more, my mother died in 1980 and my dad died in 1991. But you hit a certain stride in your life where you're like, my gosh, my parents had a huge influence on me. And I just want to shout out to all those people. Today, there's a lot of people who influence me, and I'm not stroking any egos here because, you know, I don't think very highly of any of these people, but there's a guy in Boston named Mike Boyle. The only problem is he believes in too much squatting, but I follow everything Mike says. Greg Cook, Lee Burton, Brett Jones, Pavel, a number of my friends, Riff, of course, a number of people I contact all the time. A guy named Tim Anderson. Out there in the Midwest, I quote him constantly. Josh Hillis, Steve-O out in California, and of course, in my gym, Mike Brown, Mark Helper. These guys have huge influences on me daily. Some of my a new guy I'm working with now, Brian Deedy, Rob Morse, Gray, a whole bunch of people, Greg Rugemer, who played in the NFL and are still coming back and sharing. These guys are huge influences in my life, and I want to make sure we, you know, shout out to all of them. Parker, Raphael.
Absolutely. The thing that I would like to wrap up on is mentioned before that you're going to be out in Long Beach, and by the time this comes out, in about a week. So besides that, what else do you have coming up? Is there any place people can see you besides, on the internet?
It's tough. I mean, I do my best to let people know. I'm In fact, right after this, I'm going to train, and then I'm going to take off for Seattle and then Canada. Next week, I'm going to Germany. I'm going to go to this year, Switzerland, Germany twice, Switzerland. I think that's an open one. But so much of my travel work is with the military, and that's, I mean, I don't even talk about when I'm going because of the security issues that I'm asked to follow. Yeah, there's a bunch. On danjohn.net, I usually have a little – I always try to mention them. Or, of course, on Facebook, I try to pump them on Facebook a little bit. I'm just not very good about that thing, and I'm sorry. I'm just not. I just get so caught up between the writing, the professor job, the grandparent thing, the father thing, the husband thing, the coach thing, that I'm not very good at letting people know. You know, so you can blame me, you know, you can blame me for a lot of things. Yeah. The fact there's only 7 days in the week. Yeah, that's my fault. We were going to go with 8 originally, and I said, no, let's go with 7. So that's, yeah.
Big mistake.
Yeah. You know, hindsight's 20/20. Actually, originally it was hindsight was 10/10. I changed that too, but I don't want to do that.
Well, before we – well, as I should say, as we wrap up, you know, one of the big, you know, pluses and positives for me ever doing this show was just somehow, you know, us meeting and for me being able to meet you and to be able to talk to you over these last couple of years and being introduced to your, you know, methodologies and things like that has been a really positive influence on me and my training and also, you know, as a – you know, strength coach myself. So I wanted to, you know, personally thank you for that. And, you know, again, that's why it is such a, you know, a pleasure to be able to talk to you and whether it's seeing you at seminars or, getting you on Skype for an hour to talk on the podcast, it's always great.
Really. And you know, and like I've told you before, you're making a difference yourself. This is amazing. 300. That's considering, you know, you don't have that. There's none of that. I don't have to wait for advertisements. I don't have to, you know, and you're doing a great work. Keep it up. And, you know, as always, if the people have further questions, you know, just ask away. The only thing I would ask is don't bigger, better deal me. Just ask an honest question and don't try to get me into an internet war with somebody because I'm not going to do it, you know, anymore.
Fair enough. Well, that is going to be it for episode 300. And as I said at the beginning, thank you so much to all the listeners out there that have downloaded the show for these last 8+ years and has continued to support the show. And the best way to support us, like Dan John was saying, we don't have advertising, so you can actually make a donation at thefitcast.com. Only if you're in the position to do so. Do not, you know, wait for your paycheck to send a donation, only if you're in the position to do so. And other than that, we'll be back next week.
Kevin, I'll do this. The day this comes out, how about if I match every donation up? Give me a number.
I'll refuse it.
No.
I'd rather you donate it somewhere else. I'd rather you donate it to like...
I will donate. The day this comes out, I'll donate... Tell you what, $100. How's that sound? Is that going to be helpful?
I won't accept it.
You have to.
Fine, then we'll put it, we'll immediately donate it to something else.
All right.
Because I think there's other organizations. This is more of just a case of, you know, making this as much of a job as possible to keep it regular for the people out there that would like to listen to it and to keep it free and all that stuff. And advertising can bog down the show, so I don't like doing that too much. But, so yeah, that's it from us for episode 300. We'll be back next week with probably some familiar faces. And also, as I mentioned before, Molly Galbraith is going to be coming up soon as well. So stay tuned for that. And again, Dan John, thank you so much.
My best to you. See you soon, my friend.